When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They could break here, Chelsea. This could be the moment. Frank Lampard for Chelsea. It's Carvalho to his right. Lampard for the title. Lampard! It's 2-0! It's Chelsea's championship! And 50 years of waiting have come to an end!
Lampard comes out to Essien!
Oh my goodness.
Classic counter-attack. Here's Didier Drogba. And now get down the middle. Drogba goes! Chelsea 2, Arsenal
1.
And Didier Drogba has...
Drogba
in the
centre! McCoy just came from behind me.
Possibly bleak as this. Drogba!
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you guys are listening. You know, you guys are tuning into another episode of Chelsea Hour. It's going to be a last minute one, but, you know, better late than never. You know, better late than never. Timpson, how are you doing?
Very good. Thanks for getting it in. It's not quite the same without a Chelsea podcast, is it?
It isn't, man. You know us, man. We got to feed the streets. You know, we can't let you guys go Friday, you know, weekend without hearing from us. And especially coming off the international break, we know you guys are starting for some Premier League football. So let's get right into it. So, Timpson, I don't know if you caught any of the international football, but me personally, I didn't catch anything apart from the Nations League. And I think one of the things I wanted to talk on a bit was with this coming on fixture congestion, it's going to be interesting because... We've seen the news today, you know, that Thiago Silva is going to be out tomorrow. It looks like Rudiger is potentially out of a back injury. And, you know, we obviously knew Kante was out of an illness, but he's obviously back training. So are you a bit worried about this coming on with the coming on fixture congestion, or how are you feeling in general?
Taking it one step at a time. For the Brentford game, losing Antonio Rudiger is always a bit of a loss because really there's nobody else that you think straight away he's the one that slots into that left centre-back role. And obviously Thiago Silva, I think it was clear from before the international break started that he wasn't going to be available, because I think he get back on the day of the Brentford game. But with the fixture congestion, I think I saw Thibaut Courtois' speech about it, and how they don't really, it's all about profit instead of the players' well-being, and I think it's gonna take its toll on players. So having a deep squad for Chelsea fans is obviously music to our ears.
Yeah, definitely. That was actually one of the things I wanted to talk about, because obviously, you know, with the current fixtures coming up ahead, it's gonna be coming quick and fast. You know, we're coming up to that winter break. So, you know, obviously we've got the Brentford game, and then we have Malmo away in the Champions League. Having that squad cohesion from Tuchel, especially, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting period, because obviously we can't, you know, play the same team over and over again. So I just want to get your thoughts on. So what are your expectations of Tuchel? You know, considering the run that we have versus our rivals. You know, obviously we've got Brentford. Just looking at the Premier League, we've got Brentford at away, Norwich at home, Newcastle away, and then Burnley at home within our next four fixtures. So obviously that gives you potentially 12 points that you'd be hoping to get. So how are you feeling about that running? Because obviously we know our rivals over at Moga, they've got a bit of a tougher run of games. I think Liverpool as well. So what are your expectations of Tuchel and the team coming into that run of fixtures?
Yeah, I'm quite optimistic, because Tuchel was brave and he made the decision to switch up the team after back-to-back losses in the Champions League and obviously in the league. And they seem to pay off for the most part against Southampton. And with the injuries that we're facing in the squad, as well as kind of building upon the changes that Tuchel made, bringing in the academy boys, Loftus-Cheek, Chalobah, Hudson-Odoi. It's an opportunity to see what he does and ultimately get like a good bit of form going, whilst obviously indirectly adding pressure to our rivals who will have more difficult games. Now, in regards to the Brentford game, I still expect us to play a particularly strong team. If we were playing someone like a Juventus or a Zenit midweek instead of a Malmo, I'd be a bit more concerned, or he'd look to make subs early. But I think we'd be expecting to win both games that week. And as for the injuries to the unavailability of Thiago Silva and Antonio Rudiger, I think it's a good opportunity for someone like a Chalobah to step up against players who were last season playing in the Championship, which he spent like three years of his career playing in anyway.
I think that is a good point. And obviously with Lukaku, you know, I think he came out early from Belgium as well. So I'm not sure if he'll play tomorrow, but be interested to see how, you know, Tuchel deals with that current squad rotation. So obviously, you know, looking at that Brentford game quickly, you know, we all know about the Brentford front two, you know, Mbeumo and Ivan Toney. You know, we know how physical they are. We know how much they love going 1v1 with their defenders. So how are you feeling about that? That proposition of not having the Thiago Silva or Rudiger as a typical physical defender, you know, are you a bit worried? You know, because obviously it looks like it will potentially be Aspie, Chalobah, and AC back three. Are there any worries you have going into that game with those guys at the back, or are you fully confident that they'll be able to deal with their physical presence? Because obviously, you know, we saw against Liverpool, even the likes of Van Dijk and Matip, they struggled. And we also saw, well, I was going to say Arsenal, but then Arsenal are looking man right here, you know. So I'll hand it back over to you.
Yeah, so with Aspilicueta, that's a seasoned professional. That's like you slot Aspie into any team or any fixture this season. And I don't think there's a Chelsea fan that's like, he's going to be a problem defensively. So Aspie will give you what Aspie's given us throughout his Chelsea career. Trevor Chalobah, he's played in relegation sides at Ipswich, Huddersfield, these teams that have tried to negate quality by making it physical. So I think it's something that he's accustomed to already. So him probably potentially playing left centre back isn't the worst thing in the world. If you had to have a concern, it's probably Andreas Christensen. But at the same time, if he's the third midfielder, he probably will be less man-to-man in considerable spells of the game. But if I had to have a concern, it would be Andreas Christensen. But at the same time, I think he's come on leaps and bounds as well.
Definitely agreed. And it will be interesting because obviously we know it's not just the front two, you know. We know they've got that extremely tall midfield that they've got there as well. You know, we've also seen some good performances, especially from the likes of Norgaard as well as Onyeka. So seeing those guys against our midfield, you know, I think it's gonna be a very, very interesting battle because they also play the three at the back. So I think it may be a kind of like a them trying to go toe to toe with us physically, not in terms of on the ball, but I feel like they're gonna try and rough us up a bit. So yeah, that's gonna be an interesting game. And obviously, you know, if you guys aren't part of the Discord, make sure you head down there because we will obviously be discussing that game there as well. So, so going on a bit more into the squad rotation aspect of what we're going through with the running. We've obviously seen the likes of Ruben Loftus-Cheek, you know, having his remontada. You know, I've got to hold my hands up. You know, he's really, really proved me wrong that he can actually play in the double six. You know, I did say that I don't think he could do it, but it is very good to be proven wrong. And, you know, I can't hold it against him, you know, about just how good he's been performing. You know, we saw him starting against Southampton. You know, he had a really good performance. And obviously, as well, Ross Barkley, you know, a player that I know I don't think he divides fans, but I feel like a lot of fans don't tend to give him the props he made. I feel fans are more apprehensive to, you know, to give him props, but obviously seeing him come off the bench as well showed us just how much strength and depth we have. So with those two, is there any possibility you'd like to see them play against Brentford in the double six or even in the twin ten position? Or are you more inclined to go with the typical, you know, Jorginho, Kovacic, and then Mount and another guy in the twin tens?
Forgive me, it was Ruben and who?
Ruben and Barkley.
Yeah, Barkley, he's still got a ways to go in terms of being someone that I regularly want to see involved in games, even if that's coming off the bench. Ruben, I would love for him to get the opportunity to build upon the form, giving players like Jorginho, who really did get the run around against Spain, the opportunity to kind of rest up. And obviously, Cobb is there as support. And I think for that midfield, having a big physical person, but with the technical prowess that he does, will be particularly good, because Brentford's press is not dissimilar to Southampton's as well. So I'd like Ruben definitely. As for Ross, probably I still need some evidence that he's someone that I should be putting my faith in, because obviously we've seen him pre-seasons before, and he's disappointed when the real seasons come through. So I'm not getting carried away by his kind of increase in form.
You know, I think that's fair enough. You know, I think Barkley is the kind of player that I think he's one of our, if not our most creative players that we've got in the team at the moment. And I would like to see him play, but it would obviously, as you said, you know, I think he needs to build out that form, you know, obviously with his current fitness issues. You know, we've seen him, you know, having a bit of like a turbulent time, you know, at Villa. So yeah, let's see. Talking about the Brentford game a bit more, what type of lineup are you expecting to see? You know, are you expecting to see a similar lineup to the Southampton game, or would you want to see a bit more, just going back to, you know, the stronger kind of lineup we've seen?
I'd like to see a bit of a mix. So trust was placed in Ruben Loftus-Cheek, trust was placed in Hudson-Odoi, and for the most part, those individuals came through. And I'd like to see that trust rewarded, but obviously I'd also like to play our strongest possible side given the players that are available. So a combination of trust and overall quality. Will Mason Mount come into the team after the England performance? That would be interesting to see. Probably so, if we're not going to play someone like Jorginho and we're going to go with the double pivot. But then if Mason Mount comes in, I can see Hudson-Odoi dropping out. But I can also see Chile B obviously coming in and building upon his good performances for England as well. So to answer the question, I would say a combination of rewarding the players that did the job for him at Southampton, and as well as trying to get as strong a squad as possible whilst taking into account those good performances.
So I know you just branched on a bit about Chilwell's performances for England. I wasn't able to, I saw a couple of highlights, but I didn't really get to see. So coming off of that performances, what were you able to see that, you know, that really struck you? Was there any like changes in stuff like his approach to his game? Does he looking a bit sharper? Like what was it especially that you felt that would aid in his battle to get back in over Marcus Alonso starting for us?
Well, he's defensively more reliable and dependable. I don't know. It was actually scary viewing watching Marcus Alonso in a back four. And he inadvertently changed the system at times to a back three. But for the most part, Ben Chilwell, he just carried on the way he finished the previous season, really. Lively, full of energy, defensively resolute. And his confidence has just been built upon. And he's had a nice time away with England after being originally left out. And obviously he's come back having scored his first ever England goal. So I think he was already on his way to starting regularly after the Southampton game. And I would just build upon that. Given how he's performed in the international break, and Alonso is also, he hasn't set the world alight.
I think that's definitely fair enough. And yeah, I would probably echo you. I would like to see, you know, Chilwell come back in. But I think with this current running of fixtures, this is like the perfect time to get fitness. You know, we're not exactly facing the most difficult opposition, and I am hoping to see a bit of like stability, you know, going forward. Because obviously, you know, with Lukaku, we're going to come onto this right now. I feel like he's spoken about how he wants to play. You know, he's spoken about how his strengths are. And I feel like one of the biggest issues will obviously be stability. You know, like having a stable attack around him, you know, that he can trust, you know, build a connection with. I mean, like that'll be key, you know, to actually getting him these consistent types of chances, whereby we're not just, you know, feeding him off scraps, we're actually giving him that clear-cut stuff. So yeah, coming on to Lukaku now, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of people, there's been a lot of discussion about him. You know, people are saying, oh, you know, he's a flat track bully. You know, I was to ask you, would you call Lukaku a flat track bully, or are people reading too much into this big game narrative?
Yeah, they're very, very deceptive, because obviously people see goals and that's what they see in those big games. But Lukaku's tactical diversity allows us to play a certain way that we necessarily wouldn't have been able to play last season. And that in itself adds value to the squad and poses a threat, because whilst they're trying to deal with the tactical issues that Lukaku has as a focal point occupying two defenders, Chelsea still have players that they had last season who are now more experienced with an extra year in the team that can still make runs in the channels, that can still buzz around and be problematic. But no, I don't think it's fair to call him a flat track bully, because I've seen him do it in big games as well. I've seen him do it in Milan derbies. I've seen him score against Juve. He just hasn't scored against the bigger clubs at the moment now. But you look at the context of who we've played in terms of the big games. Man City, like, did we give him any service? We were trying to exploit the counter. So he was receiving the ball to hold and very much trying to feed in Timo with his pace to exploit that high line. Then Juve, yeah, he had that chance, but everyone has off nights. I've seen him score against them before, and I think he'll do it in the return leg at home. Then Liverpool, obviously being down to 10 men, he was a focal point that helped us alleviate some of the pressure, because at one stage it was almost like an onslaught, and having expecting a player to kind of so devoid of any support besides Mason Mount, who was somewhat behind him anyway, it's unrealistic to expect him to score in that scenario. So I feel like a little bit of context is needed there.
Definitely. I would definitely agree. And the next part of it, I want to ask you, is that necessarily a bad thing? Because, you know, we looked at it last season under Tuchel specifically, you know, we didn't struggle in the big games. You know, we didn't struggle, you know, in terms of controlling them, you know, getting the goal to win the game. But it was actually the smaller games, you know, that we actually really struggled in. So even if he is a flat track bully, is that necessarily a bad thing? And isn't that what we actually need, you know, looking forward? And I also get your thoughts on that in terms of that angle of the question. So if he is to be a flat track bully, is that really a bad thing, you know, seeing as where our weaknesses really did lie?
I do not think it's a bad thing, even if it was true. As you said, we struggled against the Newcastles of the Premier League that just sit there, concede possession and say, go and beat us. That's where Lukaku comes in. Okay, you're going to give me all the time in the world in terms of like not pressing me when I'm in a certain area. Chances will come. I'm that focal point that will dominate in the air and be the problem that Chelsea didn't have to give you last season. And then when it comes to these bigger games, this is where I put my stock in Tuchel as one of the top three managers in the league. And more often than not, he's come out trumps against managers when it comes to those big games tactically. So I'd look at him to come up with a system to win more so than Lukaku. Lukaku in those scenarios would just be a valuable piece to use.
No, I definitely would agree. And yeah, in terms of my opinions, you know, as you mentioned, you know, we've seen him score the big goals, you know, for Inter last season. So we've also seen him get a couple, you know, in the Euros as well, you know, this summer. So I do feel as though people do look into it a bit much. However, I would also say, you know, in the big games, I'm going to be looking to see him, you know, doing a bit more in terms of like his consistency of like final ball. You know, I thought like he could have done a bit better in some games, you know. And, you know, if he's, you know, this world-class striker that we've been told he is, I'm expecting to put away these chances, you know, like the chance against, you know, Juve. And it was a half chance, but hey, look, the top strikers, they put that away. You know, we saw that Sunday, you know, in the Nations League, you know, with Benzema's goal from like not even a half chance, you know, like just making a moment of magic, you know, and just like setting it alight for the team. So in terms of me, I do think people are reading a bit too much into the big game narrative, you know. Obviously, you only play what, 8 of them, 60 if that, you know, during the season. So if he's, you know, bullying the other, you know, 14 teams in the league, will I be complaining? Probably not. You know, probably not. That would give me a good return. So yeah, going on a bit further on now, you know, this also, you know, pertains to Lukaku, you know, is the Ballon d'Or 30-man list, you know. Obviously, before we really discuss, we've got to obviously congratulate The Chelsea men's and women's players who were obviously put up into their respective lists. You know, talking about the men's list a bit more specifically, you know, we obviously saw Jorginho, you know, we saw Kante, we saw Mount, we saw Aspie specifically. And the reason I wanted to talk about those ones was because obviously they were the guys who didn't, you know, coming off Chelsea, and obviously Rom, you know, coming off his season at Inter Milan. So, Tim, so I wanted to get your initial thoughts on that 30-man list. You know, were there any surprises, you know, in terms of omissions and inclusions, or do you think this was like a well-deserved nomination list on our hand?
There's always going to be different opinions. Obviously, really pleased that Mason Mount managed to make that list. J5 and the like, I think based on what they did in the Champions League and in the European Championships, J5 deserved it. Obviously, I think it's more, the focus should be more about the omissions from a Chelsea perspective. Obviously, Edouard Mendy, this is a player, this is a goalkeeper who set kind of records in the Champions League. He came in for a world record goalkeeper and he's just been brilliant. He makes him seem like he makes it obsolete, aside from the odd penalty shootout. And this is a player who was, if there was no goalkeepers included in that 30-man shortlist, I could just be like, okay, fair enough. They've just gone for outfield players. But the fact that Donnarumma's been included, but Mendy hasn't, I'm of a similar mind with the Senegalese players like Koulibaly and Mane in regards to, yeah, it's ridiculous that player being overlooked. But for the most part, I don't really have a strong opinion outside of that one particular player being omitted from the squad. What about you, Babs?
I think I've got to echo your opinions. You know, I don't have any issue with any players that were, you know, nominated. I was half surprised that Mount got nominated, I won't lie, and even Aspie, but coming off of a strong season, you know, I guess, you know, when you get that Champions League, you know, you do get that extra bit of clout. So I'm not exactly going to be complaining. You know, it was good, obviously, good to see Rom, you know, get nominated as well, you know, coming off a very, very strong season for Inter, you know, the league's MVP, you know, Inter's top scorer, top assister, you know, he was literally top for all of their key stats from chance creation to just everything. So I do think that those three, in terms of Jorginho, Kante and Rom especially, do deserve it. And I want to get your opinion. Do you think Mendy's being snubbed, do you think that has to do with him being an African goalkeeper? Because obviously, you know, Mane and the other Senegalese players made the point. And I've got to agree, you know, to see a goalkeeper that, you know, that came in, as you said, for a record-breaking goalkeeper. And not only that, he made his own records in the Champions League in terms of clean sheets, including in the final itself. I do think that's pretty insane. And I do have to like look a bit like, you know, they included, what was it, Donnarumma and I forgot who the second goalkeeper was. I'll obviously correct that later, but I know they included two other goalkeepers. So seeing them, you know, being included, but not, you know, the Champions League winning goalkeeper, I thought that was a bit of a weird one. So, yeah. And in terms of our chances, Tim, so do you think we have a chance of having a winner here? In terms of an actual Ballon d'Or winner this year, or are you just hoping to just enjoy the wave as it goes?
Nah, for me, I think it wouldn't shock me if it was someone like Lewandowski, particular, maybe even Messi again, just for the fact that you look at what he did last season and you look at the state of Barcelona now, it looks even more remarkable, the achievements that he did in that Barcelona squad that is just a joke. So I think for me it's one of those two. I wouldn't be upset if Robert Lewandowski got it, because last time when it was last cancelled, he was pretty much a shoo-in to win it. So I think it would be justice for him to win it at this point again, especially after the record-breaking season he had in the Bundesliga for goals. Jorginho is probably the closest that we've got to it. Ultimately, he wasn't, I don't think he's had the season outside of winning those two European competitions. I don't think he's had that mastermind level individual performances this season to kind of compete with those two players in particular. So I think as Chelsea fans, we should just be happy to get as many players nominated for this one as we did.
Fair enough. Do you think you're being a bit harsh with Jorginho there? You know, obviously, you know, coming off of two strong campaigns for club and country. Or do you think he, obviously, you know, we still ever, you know, speak about it as well as obviously the Italian and Chelsea managers. And, you know, obviously, you know, when you look at Jorginho's key role, especially for Italy, do you not think that, you know, maybe that holds a bit more weight, you know, do you think just obviously with the sheer consistency that we've seen up from the likes of Lewandowski and Messi throughout a season, do you think those two weigh up differently?
You know what, Babs, I think you might be right that I'm being slightly harsh because he did play key roles. He quickly went from who's going to be partnering Kante, Kovar or Jorginho to who's going to be partnering Jorginho if Kante, ideally if he's fit, or Kovacic. And then he was obviously central to that very, very talented Italian midfield that won the European Championship. So maybe I'm downplaying his performances this last season, but in regards to the, like, he played key roles, but the players that I mentioned, Messi and Lewandowski, there were several times where they carried their teams through through spells of the season, and their absences were felt when they weren't there. Not to say Jorginho's wasn't, and obviously you throw in the consistency that Robert Lewandowski and Messi have produced over the years, and this is very much a very, very good outlying season for Jorginho. So yeah, I'd still put those other two ahead for those reasons.
No, I do think that's fair. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, have been a lot of people have been getting quite annoyed, you know, from Chelsea fans and you know, obviously putting Jorginho there, because obviously it was the whole joke of you know, obviously after the Champions League, everybody was saying, you know, it's Kante, you know, then going to see Euros, you know, it's Kante gonna secure it. I mean, obviously Italy winning, it was like, okay, you know what, we're gonna jump on the Jorginho train. But yeah, for me personally, I think I'd agree. You know, I do think, you know, he probably does deserve to be you know, up there in terms of getting like the top, like maybe within like the top 10, top 15. But as you said, you know, I can't take away from the consistency of a season. And then the Ballon d'Or is the individual award, you know, so it should also always go to the best individual performance. You know, obviously not everyone's gonna agree with us, but I do think it's fair. So the second question I'm gonna ask you about that is if it was between those current Chelsea players, you know, including Rom, so obviously Jorginho, Kante, Mao, and Aspia Rom, who do you feel would be the most deserving winner out of those five?
Oh, now this is
where it's a tough one, isn't it? Yeah.
I would probably get close. It'd probably be a two-horse race between Rom for what he did, winning the title for the first time in a long time with Inter, and then obviously everything Jorginho did in terms of the European Championships and the Champions League. I'll probably just about edge it to J5 because he was so integral, not to say Lukaku wasn't, but this was a player who also has an underdog story as well to him. Sarri son, the guy who couldn't make it, going from someone who, what is the regista, he's detrimental to our best player, Kante, to kind of being a leading man at club and country level. So I'd give it to, it's got a feel-good factor to it that puts him just ahead of Lukaku for me.
Yeah, I do think that's fair enough. I think it would be tight between him, Kante and Rom. But for me personally, you know, when I look at the season that Lukaku had at Inter, you know, leading the team to their first, you know, Scudetto in God knows how many years, you know, against the odds, you know, against Ronaldo-led Juve. I think for me, that just about edges it. You know, I think Kante as well, he's also got an equal claim to it as much as Jorginho, because for me personally, he performed a lot better in the Champions League as it was anyway. So I do think it would be a bit tight between those two. But yeah, you know, for me, either way, you know, having any Chelsea player win it would always be nice. You know, it would always be nice to have the bragging rights. And I know it will definitely, you know, annoy the ops. So yeah, that was a good section. So to coming on to another one, I want to do a quick transfers, you know, section. You know, it's a bit weird obviously with it being October, but obviously with Newcastle's current sale going through, you know, another big money club coming into the mix, you know, it's been coming out that they've actually identified Timo, Ruben and Barkley are transfer targets. And I want to get your opinion on that. You know, would you be happy to sell to them? And if so, Do you think we'd need replacements for any of them if we were to do that?
Barkley, I wouldn't have too many reservations about selling. Timo either. These are players that are, to get the best out of them, you need to be playing niche roles. A two-man attack is very niche at the moment, especially with a big man, little man partnership, which is where we saw the best of Timo. Ross, I think, at this point, he's never going to be a starter for Chelsea. He's never going to hit the promise and be that new Gazza that he was labelled with when he first broke through at Everton. So for him to just kind of have a solid England career, playing regular football at a team in transition. So maybe we could see him, we could see Villa in the next few seasons transitioning to what West Ham are doing at the moment. And for him to be a big part of that would be really, really good for Ross and his international prospects. So I wouldn't have any reservations about selling either of those players. And to be honest, Timo particularly, If I could have him never sign or just leave the squad now, I probably would, just for the fact that he's such a niche player, and we signed him not realizing how niche he is in terms of what he can give us and the best conditions to get the best out of him.
Do you think you're being a bit harsh on Timo? You know, obviously, you know, we've seen, you know, as useless as he can be, you know, in front of goals. We did see, you know, against Southampton, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, obviously, with his constant pace threat, you know, he is always a constant worry for defenders. And we did see, you know, obviously, you know, he missed a couple of chances, but he also got that goal. So do you think you're underrating his importance to our attack? Or do you think our attack is basically in spite of him, if that makes sense?
Well, maybe saying I wish we never signed him goes a bit too far, so I'll take that back. He's had good spells. He always works hard, puts in a shift. But in terms of his tactical diversity, there is a reason why he wasn't brought on when we were chasing the game at Juventus, because his game is all about spacing behind, and that was something that wasn't there. And then even if there's no spacing behind, for me, you should be able to face up your man, work the space to either beat him or put in a cross and be dangerous with players in front of you. Timo cannot do that. He looks very confused when he's faced up with a man. And I'm surprised he hasn't been working on his one-on-one take-on skills either. So for those kind of shortcomings, I'd still be happy to see him leave now.
Fair enough. And if he was to leave, you know, would you think we need a replacement for him? Because obviously he was obviously our tied top goal scorer last season, and he probably is one of our biggest goal threats, as scary as that is to sound, coming after him, Lukaku. So do you think we need to replace him? And if we were to, who would you like to see, you know, coming as a replacement for him?
I'd like someone, first of all, I wouldn't want someone to be a like-for-like team or replacement. I think with the likes of Hudson-Odoi, Pulisic, Mason Mount, Kai Havertz, we have players who can play in those 2-10 positions. And if needs be, if we wanted to go with pure wingers for a different system, Timo's someone who wouldn't suit that anyway, and he doesn't suit the role of a centre-forward. So I wouldn't want a direct replacement. I probably want someone similar in the mould of Lukaku, just for the fact that I'm a bit concerned about the amount of playing time. So if he's fit, he will play, and he will play the full 90. We don't have anyone to even bring on just for like the last 10, 15 minutes of Lukaku and retain the same semblance of a tactical game plan, because as soon as you bring on Timo Werner for Romelu Lukaku, the system changes and the way the team plays in terms of getting the ball into the striker changes. So I wouldn't mind someone in the mould of who can be kind of like a target man and offer kind of running in behind the way Lukaku does. So to just name off some names, potentially Alexander Isak could do a bit of hold-up play, but also very adept at running in behind and causing trouble with his movement. And obviously, I'm a big fan of a young man called Benjamin Sesko up in Red Bull Salzburg. been very, very, he's been lightly compared to Erling Haaland, doesn't have the same level of blistering and pace, but he's got that speed, that instinct for goal, and that left foot that is just technically more attractive, seeing a left-footed player just curl balls in with finish his chances with his left foot. So probably those two players of that mold to kind of alleviate some of the pressure for Lukaku whilst also kind of getting some invaluable game time at a top level club would probably make a lot of sense.
I think that's a very balanced argument. In terms of me, for me, I'm half and half, you know, about whether I'd want to sell them, you know, because if it was to a foreign team, I'd be happy to do that. But selling to another team, you know, in the league to strengthen them, I'm not sure how I feel about that. You know, I'm not sure because obviously, you know, Newcastle with this influx of money, it probably would be nice, you know, to get the cash from them straight away. You know, just get the money, you know, early on, because you know how like people used to joke, you know, Everton, you know, oh yeah, I can sell this squad player to Everton for 40 million. You know, and obviously, you know, people are going to be looking at Newcastle like as that for the first couple of seasons, but it does look as though they're going to be a bit more strewed with their signings, you know, in terms of like getting a proper director of footballer in, you know, a proper like chief operator. So I do think that'd be interesting. But if it was up to me, at Barkley, I would sell because I do think as effective as he can be coming to the bench occasionally, I'm not sure about how consistent he's going to get an opportunity to do that. And I do think, you know, it would be beneficial for him to, you know, get some minutes. And as you said, you know, to really stake his thing for England, because I don't think he's actually far off the England squad, you know, if he's on form. You know, I still think he's a quality player. I think he's got a lot of quality in his game. And we did see, you know, before he got injured for Villa, how good he played. But obviously, as we said, is that having that consistency of game time, consistency not to get injured, I think that's another one. And same for Ruben, you know, I don't think he's too far off the England team either. When I look at the England midfield, I don't think of it as like the strongest area in terms of difficulty to get in. So if it was an attacker, yeah, then fair enough. But in terms of the midfield, you know, Rice and Phillips, Mount in that midfield three, I think Ruben can easily, you know, pip them. And coming from me, you know, who's not exactly been the biggest of supporters of him through his injury, you know, to my detriment. But I do think, you know, he could do it. And for his own benefit, if it was to go to Newcastle, you know, for him to get a season a bit in before next year, November's and World Cup, I do think that would be important for him to do that, you know, just to stake his claim. And in terms of Timo, the only reason I wouldn't want to sell him is because I think he'd be the one that you'd actually have to go out into the transfer market and replace, you know. And to replace goals in the January transfer window, I don't think it's that easy. You know, I don't think it...
Hold on, did you just say Timo and goals?
Look, as I said, man, he's our second top goal scorer. You know, like I know he's not scoring a lot, but we're starving out here, brother. We're starving. You know, we're starving for the goals.
And I will give you one player who will give you very, very similar like for like output and more than likely will score more goals. I will give you one name off the top of my head.
Within Chelsea.
Not moving Chelsea, and that's but someone
my point.
That we could bring
that's
in.
My point, right?
Someone I that think... we could bring in at a fraction of the price if we acted today.
Who?
Karim Adeyemi.
Bro, that's not... Come on, man. We know we're not going to sign him in a January transfer window.
As a release clause, it's very cheap. In
really?
Comparison
okay,
to
what okay. You know what? You know what? I'm listening. You know what? I'm listening. I wasn't aware of him having a low release clause, especially coming in January, but... I know we were linked a couple of years back, and I know he was a bit apprehensive to join us, obviously, with how we dealt with youth players. So that'd be interesting. But to get a player like that, I think due to the age he's at, he's the kind of player he needs game time, you know. So I'm not sure how likely it is for him to come in and us to play him consistently enough. Because I don't think he's the kind of player he's going to come in and be happy to like sit on the bench, if you get what I mean. But I don't think that's actually, I think that's a good name. If I was going to talk about other replacements, I'd like to see a Gori. You know, he plays for Nice, you know, and he's been probably their best performer this season. He's actually currently in line for, I believe, the league player of the month. You know, he's had a very, very strong start to the season. He's been there, I think he's been their top creator as well. You know, he's a goal scorer. He's also a creative player. So I do think having a player like that would also be good for us. You know, if I was to like him to another guy, I think I'd probably go with him, Karim Benzema. You know, he's obviously got 5 goals and 3 assists in 8 games so far this season. So you can already see that the level of output he has. He's very creative in terms of like getting chances for his team. You know, he's also quite good in front of goal. So I think having that kind of guy, you know, he could play in the twin tens and strike could be another good replacement. I think if any team were to go for that kind of player, I think it would be a Liverpool, you know, just to replace a Firmino. But yeah, as you said, you know, if there are replacements for Timo in January, I'd be happy to sell him. But I'm not sure how easy it's going to be to replace him, if you get what I mean. Like, I'm not sure how willing players are going to be to move to us in January. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I hear that. I'm like, getting players in January, I just feel like you have to, it's an emergency transfer window. It's exactly. Not one where you do significant business. But obviously, I've already said with the players that we already have in the squad, Pulisic, Hudson-Odoi, I don't think we necessarily need to replace Timo, because playing out wide off the striker, we've got those two players that can do that job, as well as Havertz and Mason Mount. So adding another one in addition to Ziyech as well, I don't really see the need. So that's why I was looking at someone like a Benjamin Sesko and Alexander Isak, or even one of my Italian favourites, Gianluca Scamacca. Someone who can deputise as that kind of target man when Lukaku needs to be rested.
Mm. And I'm also talking about transfers, and a name you mentioned there, you know, Christian Pulisic. You know, obviously he's going to be available for, he's actually been unavailable for 10 out of 12 of Chelsea's games so far this season. And he's also been confirmed to miss out on Brentford's game. You know, shout out to Alexis. He's got a very interesting spreadsheet going on, you know. Out of the 836 days he's been available to Chelsea, he's missed 334. So he's been injured throughout those. So that's 40% of days he's been injured. So with the summer coming, with you know, with his contract, you know, into his last 2 years, do you think it's time to let him go and sell him, or do you think it will be a smart choice to extend his deal? Because obviously, you know, selling him now, you know, the injury worries, it would be probably on the cheap. What do you think about that, Timson?
Well, he can still add value when he's at his best, but I still think he needs to round out his game, continue to be a consistent threat, making those late man runs. Show me you can dominate games outside of a post-lockdown project restart patch. So I wouldn't be upset if someone said to him, look, you've got a lot of players in front of you in the pecking order, you can't stay fit. And when you do come back, you still have a ways to go to even get those minutes, because you still have that long queue ahead of you in the pecking order. I wouldn't be opposed to him going out on loan the same way Ruben did and said, show me for at least one season you can stay fit. If Andy Carroll could do it last season at Newcastle, surprisingly, then Christian Pulisic should be expected to at least do the same for a season. Then obviously put across some good performances, not necessarily keep a relegation side up, not to say that he has to go to a relegation side. I think he's more than good enough to go to a team challenging for Europe or mid-table. But have that good season under, that full season under your belt, where you're that guy, you start when you're available, no questions asked, and you're fit. Because if you're not available, you're not reliable.
You say that, but do you think it would be a wise choice, you know, to loan him, you know, going on with only 1 year left in his contract? Or do you think that could pose a bit of a worry? And do you think he would actually want to go out on loan? You know, obviously, you know, he's a player of, you know, quite high stocks, you know, at Chelsea. And it would be an interesting one to see whether he'd be willing to go on loan, you know, at this point in his career.
Honestly, I think he'd be taken back by the notion of him potentially going on loan. I think he does miss his family, but he does enjoy being in London. So going on loan would be a bit of a like, no, I'm not really trying to do that. But in terms of the bigger picture for his long-term development, getting regular minutes, because I don't think he deserves regular minutes at this point in time. And honestly, the only thing that's given him hope right now is the fact that we don't have a front, an attacking two behind Lukaku that's really, really clicked. So he'll always be into consideration as long as there's not a two that's working really, really well. So if there was, he'd have to work. He'd be in a similar situation to Saul in terms of they've got a proven system that's working. And
that's a name that I forgot about.
When's he going to get the minutes to kind of show that he can add value and compete? Because the two are playing so well, and even the players on the bench ahead of Saul are doing well. Christian Pulisic, it might sound a bit extreme to send him on loan, but he needs to show he can be available for a full season. How much football he gets depends on how well the other attackers are doing. But at the moment, he's got a chance because there's not one attacker at the moment who's kind of being like, I'm the one who's clicking with Lukaku, let alone two.
Yeah, no, I do think that's fair enough. And I'm talking about that but behind Lukaku, you know, we also mentioned earlier in the show, but if it were up to you and you were to have a run of, you know, over the next five fixtures, you know, having a consistent front, consistent two behind the strike, behind Lukaku, who would those two be for you?
Oh, it's tough because I have an affinity towards Callum Hudson-Odoi, and just having at least one player to give us consistent width on the left-hand side would be amazing. Coupled with Kai Havertz, who's a player that we've placed a lot of stock into for the long haul, and his ability to find space and almost double as a secondary striker and be an aerial threat to defences would be quite interesting to see. But I can't overlook the tactical importance of Mason Mount. So if I could, without kind of any word for any concern for kind of tactical shape and fluidity, I'd probably say Hudson-Odoi and Kai Havertz. But I can't see Mason Mount being left out of the team for particularly long.
I do think that's fair. I do think that's fair, you know. So are you going with Mount and Havertz, or is that a Mount and Cho?
I'm going to go... what I want to see is obviously Cho playing that left-hand side in his best position. So I'm going to go Cho and Havertz. But realistically speaking, it's going to be... I'd have to choose Havertz and Mason because they're probably the best at finding space and the best at balancing attacking defensive shape.
I'd agree with that. I would agree with that. If it were up to me, I would go with probably Cal and Mount or Havertz. But for me, I think it's a difficult one, as you said, because, you know, with Kai's in a current form, you know, for us at the moment, I'm not sure how much I trust him, you know, to play him there. But I do think, you know, the kind of player he is, I think with a consistent run of games, he would be able to get back to his good runner for me towards the end of last season. I do also think in terms of the way he plays, I think he's a bit tough, you know, with Lukaku. You know, we saw, obviously, he had his most consistent runner performances, you know, playing in that false nine position. And I do think it may be a bit hard because obviously Lukaku likes to occupy the same positions as him. But I do think, you know, as I said in other episodes, you know, Tuchel, I don't see why he can't, you know, adapt the system to have it as having Kai being able to roam in those positions as well. You know, I do think, you know, if you want to get the best out of him, he's got to be in and around the penalty area. So if it was to be him to play, I would like to see like a split strike kind of thing. If maybe Kai in behind, you know, being able to hold the wide positions as well. But in terms of what I think would probably be the most realistic, it would probably be over the next couple of games. It probably would be Cow on the left and then Mount on the right, you know, because I do think, you know, having Kai on the right, it could bear dividends. But I think because of the way Lukaku plays and the positions he wants to occupy, I think it may make it a bit difficult for him. But in terms of like the current way he plays, so I'd probably go with that front three. And talking about attackers, you know, obviously, you know, it's come out of recent that a certain Raheem Sterling, you know, he's admitting that he would, you know, if he could, you know, get regular football, you know, and it can't be under City, he would be willing to go elsewhere. So I want to get your opinions on that, Tim. So how willing would you be to have him at Chelsea? You know, like he's obviously, you know, struggled in terms of getting game time under Pep currently. You know, we know how Pep is, you know, with his players, you know, after a couple of seasons, you know, he's willing to throw them away to the wind. You know, we saw that with Alexis, with Eto, we saw it with Ibrahimovic. We've seen it with countless attackers. So how would you feel about seeing, you know, Raheem Sterling at Chelsea and do you think it bears any risks, or do you think the benefits just far outweigh them?
Yeah, you have an opportunity to destabilize kind of like your squad harmony, because it's already tight for competition and you bring in another player. It's all a balancing act, and I think that might be one superstar or one top player too many for Thomas Tuchel to keep the overall squad happy, because we mentioned who should be the two that you would like to see going forward. There wasn't a mention of Hakim Ziyech, and he's relatively content just kind of grinding in, on the training pitch trying to work. Raheem Sterling, I don't know if he necessarily comes in and when everybody's at their best, I don't necessarily think he starts, because I think if everybody's on form, it's still Mason Mount and Kai Havertz because of what they bring on the defensive and offensive end, their ability to find space and be so fluid like we saw in the first couple minutes of the Liverpool game. That is probably the best front three at the moment on paper. Raheem Sterling, I really, really like, but yeah, I think he just adds, I just think he adds another headache more so than he's clear of everybody else we have in that position. So I would probably say no, thinking with my head. What about you, Babs?
For me personally, man, you know, I think in the way, in the current way our attack is, I think it's impossible to turn away a world-class player. I think it's absolutely impossible, especially when said player scores more than 99% of our current attackers, you know, even in the bad season. In terms of worries, I think it could be a bit of a worry because he's obviously on a quite a big contract at City, and with him, with the current age he's at, he's not going to want to take a pay cut. He's probably going to want to take a pay increase. So I think that's like the potential worry. And probably in terms of that, aiding to the obvious thing that people say, you know, when a player gets this age, what's their motivation? You know, Sterling's won three Premier Leagues already now. So it would be interesting to see, like, you know, what kind of motivation he'd have going forward. But I think for me personally, I'd have to take him, you know, like having a player, you know, in the peak of his powers, you know, being able to provide the numbers that he does simultaneously with the consistent performance that he's done for City over the last, what, 4 or 5 seasons. I think for me, like, it's just so hard, you know, to turn that down. And if it was, you know, and it probably would come at a cut price, you know, seeing as the fact that his stock at City has obviously dropped. You know, obviously he's coming, so I think he's coming to, what, the last couple years of his contract as well. So his contract expiring in 2023, you know, if we were to, you know, try and go in the next summer, you know, and you have to remember the guy is still 26. So, hey, like, I think he's got a couple more years in him. So for me personally, I'd be all over that. You know, he can play in a false nine. He can play left wing, you play right wing, and he can play all two of those three positions to a top, top level. So for me personally, if it was to come at a cut, like a 40, 50 million odd price, I would be all over it. I'd be all over it. Cause I just don't think you can turn away a world-class player, you know, like a Raheem Sterling. And I think under a manager like Tuchel, in the system that we play, you know, whereby our two, quote-unquote, 10/ wingers are so close to goal, I think he'd only go and flourish. And I think it'll be one of those signings that are quite astute, because I don't think City can really bargain for too much money. The only thing, obviously, is that with it being us as rivals to them, it'll be about their willingness to sell. And obviously, he's been linked with the moves to Barca and Real Madrid, but do they have the money? So I think in terms of competition, it'll probably be between us, the Spanish teams, potentially, and maybe even a Liverpool. But I think in terms of payment packages, I think we could beat all of them. So for me personally, I'd be all over that. I'd be all over. I don't know if that changed any of your opinions, Timpson, anything that I said.
I've got some questions for you. So
go for it.
Raheem Sterling is a world-class player.
Is that a question?
Yeah, is so you say
that's
so
a statement, bro.
You're saying Raheem Sterling is a world class player.
Facts.
Now, with that, I've got flashbacks to Leroy Sané. I think Raheem Sterling is clear of Raheem Sané, and he's got individual brilliance to pull his team out of sticky situations. But my concern comes from how much of his growth and development is because of the system at City that allows him to run into spaces. He's become a threat off the ball. When he was like 17, 19, he was a player that very much showed his best football when he was on the ball. But now he's running into spaces, receiving the ball and scoring goals as a result of his dangerous work off the ball. Now, will he shine? Are you that confident he will shine outside of a Pep system? Considering Leroy Sané,
100%, 100%. Sorry to interrupt you. I am more than confident. I'm more than confident. If anything, I think the system has actually, you know, hindered him in some aspects, such as like his individual play, in terms of his ability to just like be able to be free to run that player. You know, and I think it's what we're going to see with Grealish as well at City. I do think, you know, his 1v1 ability, even though is obviously, you know, not, I wouldn't say declined. His ability hasn't declined, but his allowance, quote unquote, to actually attempt dribbles has, if you get what I mean, just because of the way Pep likes to play. And I do think at Chelsea, you know, a team whereby we are obviously devoid of dribblers outside of Cal and Pulisic when he's fit, I think the level of which he's able to go 1v1 with players, I think that's something that is not exactly easy to actually compete with. And I do think that individual brilliance was something that we've been devoid of since we've had Eden Hazard, you know, a couple of seasons ago. And I think a player like Sterling, he's going to just do that consistently, you know, like not just in terms of like getting the goals, because, you know, people always, you know, mention the fact that, you know, obviously, you know, the goal scoring at City, you know, that's where it's come along. But I think people forget, you know, even before Pep, you know, came in, you know, he was still 1-3 at City. He had a 1-3 season at 18 years old, I believe, at Liverpool as well, where he got 9 in 24 starts. So I do think the goal threat and the creation has always been there with him. But I just think that the platform to do it was obviously elevated at City. But I'm not saying that the platform was allowed, you know, just in terms of like him being a system player, but I just think he was able to take it by the scruff of the neck. And I think at Chelsea, he'd be able to do that while simultaneously being able to exemplify his individual brilliance. I just think that kind of signing will be perfect for us. I think it'll be perfect.
Cool. I have no other follow-up questions. The passion, the convincing argument. Yeah, fair enough. If Raheem Sterling wants to come, bring him.
Hey, man, I'd love it, man. I'd love it. You know, he's a London boy as well, so I'm sure he'd also appreciate, you know, coming back closer to his family. And to round it up, we've got one listener's question from Luke LCH. Shout out to you. He wants to know, would you want Hazard back at Chelsea?
No. I love Edin. Unfortunately, anyone wanting him is looking at it from a sentimental perspective. If his name was Mark Johnson and he was just he didn't have the career prior at Chelsea that he did, this wouldn't be a discussion. While I think that Hazard will probably improve based on what we've seen, he is a diminished player and he's someone that was so brilliant. He earned the kind of leeway that he got from a defensive tactical perspective. So the last thing Thomas Tuchel needs is someone who's not as good as Neymar, wanting kind of Neymar tactical
allowances,
kind of, yeah, tactical license and tactical freedoms, especially if they're not going to be able to stay fit. And who knows if he'll be able to stay fit, but we love Edin for what he's done, but it's a no from me.
I think you put it in a well way. And for me personally, man, I think the best way to put it is like this, man. Look, man, you see the thing about the old days, very the old days, you know, like,
yes, like the
hey, man, sometimes you just got to leave it in the past. Just leave it, man. We're moving forward, you know, onwards and upwards. And, you know, with that, you know, I think that was a good episode. But before I leave, I want to get your prediction, you know, for the Brentford game. What are you expecting from the boys score-wise?
I expect us to score 2 or 3, I think. just to, because I don't think Brentford will take the loss lying down or kind of just lie down at any spell in the game. So we'll need to score a few goals just to knock the wind out of their sails. What about yourself?
I definitely agree. You know, we obviously saw, you know, against Liverpool, sorry, as well as the result they got, you know, we also saw that they are quite defensively there to be gotten at. You know, but we've also seen them be resolute against the likes of Wolves. So for me personally, I'm going with a confident 2-0 win. I think there's no excuse but to continue our form, you know, going into the international break and coming out of it. So for me personally, I'm going to have to go 2-0. And in terms of lineup, I'd be interested to see a lineup of Trev. It's probably going to have to be Trev, Aspi, and AC at the back three. You know, obviously, there's no chance we're going to be seeing Malang Sarr. I don't know if you saw the training clip of Kante weaving in and out, but seeing Sarr just absolutely like collapse as he's trying to make a lunging tackle, just it sent me into just a flurry of laughter. And I just don't want to see that anywhere near the starting lineup for us.
The only thing he's got going for him at this point is being left-footed.
Legit.
That's what it is. Like, maybe he can be like Kante's stunt double. but that's about it at the moment, because I saw the tweet where he was dropped by Kante and someone commented like Malang Sarr is a social experiment at this point.
Honestly, I don't know what we're planning on doing there with him. I feel as though like having him here at Chelsea, I think he's gonna drop his stocks even more in terms of his price, because clubs are going to be seeing all these highlights of him just being left for dead. So, I'm going to go with that and back three. In terms of wing backs, it's got to be Chilwell coming back in alongside and Reece James on the other flank. In midfield, I'd like to see Ruben play just to have that extra physicality alongside Kante. I feel like that could be a really strong midfield to have. And I feel like we're going to need the legs, especially against Brentford. In terms of the front three, if Lukaku's fit, I'm going to have to go with him up top. But if he's not, I'd probably go with a front three of Havertz, Callum and Mount. I think that could be a quite a good, you know, high energetic and front three, you know, quite interchangeable as well. So for me, that would be my lineup.
Yeah, that's a strong lineup. I think Ben Chilwell, definitely. I wasn't even aware that Reece James was fully fit again. So that's a good boost. Might be a game too soon for him. I'd like to see him make some cameo appearances, to be honest, instead of throwing him straight in against a well-rested Brentford side. So I wouldn't be shocked if we went with a different system, or even Malang Sarr as a left centre-back, while we went with Trev, right centre-back, and Aspilicueta, right wing-back. But ultimately, as we said at the top of the pod, more players building upon what they did in the Southampton game, combined with players who did very, very well in the as far as our strongest 11 goes.
Definitely. And yeah, I think that's the best way to end the podcast. Timson, thanks for joining me again.
Always a pleasure.
And peace.
On Twitter and ranting, doing the most. True say that money is power, so when you get money, keep quiet and ghost. I remember when I shot my shot, but I didn't have guap, so I hit the post. But next time it's a golden goal. And
Sports Social Podcast Network.